Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Freedom Mortgage, dedicated to veterans and their homeownership needs. Visit freedommortgage.com. NMLS 2767. Equal housing lender.
Good morning, and welcome to the Morning Briefing for Wednesday, November 8th, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer, and today we have a huge show coming your way. You might say a special show, as we've got a couple of special operators coming on. Coming up, we'll be joined by Nick Etten. Nick is a former Navy SEAL and Naval Academy graduate who currently heads up the Veterans Cannabis Project. They're a group working to have medical marijuana researched by the VA for uses in treating our wounded warriors. And then, we're going to let an Army Special Forces operator get in on the action as Tim Kennedy, Green Beret, TV star, and former UFC middleweight contender, will join us live on the show. So yeah, it's a good one. I wasn't lying to you. Of course, I never am. Every Monday through Friday, Jake and I are giving you a good product. And you know that because you're listening right now already. But I'd start everything off now by welcoming Jake, the Texas Rattlesnake Hughes, here into the studio. And not only are you Jake, the Texas Rattlesnake Hughes, you are Texas'd up today.
Yes, I am. I am wearing my T-shirt from Grunt Style, the one that 20% of proceeds went to, or not, I think it was more than that, went to helping aid down in Texas.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much money from the shirts went down to it, but I know a lot of it did. And we did a story, which is one of our most popular stories on the website because it was such a great story, of how they went to a small town down in kind of rural Texas, a town that, you know, wasn't Houston necessarily by any stretch of the imagination. They just happened upon it. A police officer seemed to recognize the Grunt Style team, brought him to this town, and they actually gave those shirts for free because a lot of people lost all their clothes. So they gave them those shirts and other things and kind of set up shop down there, which is pretty cool. But you've got that Texas Stronger Than the Storm shirt and then your Houston Astros hat. I don't know.
Houston Texans. I tried to find some pants that had like Houston Texans on them, but I couldn't find any.
Well, you do have the Houston Texans thong though, and you know, no, nobody can see it, but we know it's there.
We don't talk about that kind of stuff on air.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
Oh yeah, we do, baby.
All right, so today we've got, as I mentioned, a big show coming on. A couple of people who are busy. And they've been busy, whether they were serving in their military career after and then again during it, in the case of Tim Kennedy. Tim Kennedy, for those who don't know, was a Green Beret, sniper specifically, I believe, with them. And while he was still on active duty, began fighting in mixed martial arts. Ended up getting pretty good. Fought for the Strike Force middleweight title at one point against Luke Rockhold. Unfortunately, Luke Rockhold came out on top. But Tim then moved over to the UFC when they were bought by Strike Force and really had a solid career. In fact, the man who was the middleweight champion until about 4 days ago, Michael Bisping, kind of won it on I don't want to call it a fluke, but anyway, he fought Luke Rockhold, the same guy who beat Tim Kennedy, who held the title at the time. And Michael Bisping, this unlikable British guy, basically won the title and defended it once and then lost it this weekend. Tim Kennedy fought Michael Bisping a couple years ago and destroyed him.
Oh, really?
I shouldn't say destroyed him. He dominated him to the point where Bisping was angrier than he usually is. He used wrestling essentially to just keep him on the ground and do what he wanted to him and didn't let this guy, this big boxing striker, do his thing. So he won that fight against a guy who would then become the champion. So to say he's champion level fighter, definitely is. But that's only a portion of what he is. He's also a TV host on the History Channel's Hunting Hitler. Yeah, he's one of the guys on there who go looking around to see if there is any evidence of Hitler leaving Germany at the end of World War II. You know, of course, we all have been told, and I think most of us know, that he did die there. But there are a lot of interesting conspiracy theories on not just Hitler, but on the Nazis that we know did go to like South America and continue living down there. Dr. Joseph Mengele, for one of them, you know, he was a horrifying human being.
Auschwitz, angel of death.
Yeah, did some horrifying things there. He was never captured, and they know that he died down in South America. Paraguay and Uruguay, I think, were the two places where he spent a lot of his time. And there's a town, I want to say in Uruguay, where they believe he had some ties to it. If you go to that town, everybody there, and keep in mind, this is like southern South America, everybody there is blonde-haired and blue-eyed. Yeah, start getting into some creepy stuff. So Tim is, he's an interesting guy, and he's interesting in that while he was on active duty, and now he's going back to the Green Berets again after leaving to focus on the TV and the fighting thing. He's gone back, and we're going to talk to him about that. He's also been very public. He is a guy who put his address out there on the internet. You know, as a lot of people were in the military being told to kind of tamp down on social media, don't use your real name, don't put where you are, don't do this. Tim Kennedy went the other route and said, here's my address, ISIS, come and get me. He's still here. They did not take him up on that offer, and had they, that probably would have been a very bad decision. Although, and we're going to talk to him about that too, I wonder how many of his friends were like, hey, maybe I'll stop in on, you know, no, I'm not going to stop in at Tim's house unannounced. I'm just, something tells me that he might be watching for people coming down the driveway. So we're going to talk to him. And Nick Etten, of course, breaking down stereotypes. I mean, the stereotype of the pothead, Jake. Yeah. What do you have when you hear someone who's really into marijuana and someone who's out there, you know, trying to get marijuana legalized even? What do you think of? You think of a pothead, right?
Yeah, I think of the guy, you know, wearing a flannel shirt, sitting on a couch in a basement, watching cartoons, stoned out of his gourd.
Yeah. Well, how about a former Navy SEAL?
That's a new one.
Yeah, he's breaking down the stereotype of the lazy, you know, the guy who just wants to get high, because that's not what it's about. The Veterans Cannabis Project is about getting cannabis looked at by the VA for treatment of our wounded warriors. Nick says, I've seen the benefit that it can do. I know that it's real, but because it's what, Schedule 1, which makes it on the worst list of drugs, essentially, it's right there with like heroin and other things like that. There are actual drugs like cocaine and things that are not Schedule 1 because they have medical uses. Schedule 1 drugs are drugs that have no use other than just being a drug, essentially. And that's the worst of the worst. Well, marijuana is listed there, even though Nick says there's plenty of documentation. So we're going to talk to him about that coming up. He joined Joe Plensler from the American Legion, and they stopped in previously, so it's pre-recorded. But a really great conversation. We also talked to Joe about the interesting survey that the American Legion did, and we're going to actually give you that information now before we head in. So if you're one of those people who only listens to the Jake and me and special guest part of the show, not the VSO podcast, when you download it, this may give you some idea of what the VSO is going to be about, and you may want to listen to it. So this is Joe Plensler discussing the results of a survey that the American Legion did on how their membership views marijuana. Medically, specifically.
We talked about 80% of the American public, upwards of that, being behind it. I mean, it's more than just that. It's more than just the American people. Like, veterans are behind this. We did a nationwide poll. The American Legion did a nationwide poll mid-October and came back with some pretty amazing results. And what we found was that 92% of veteran households support medical cannabis research. Okay. I mean, that's a huge number. That's 10 points higher, 10 to 12 points higher than polling from the American public. We're looking at, you know, these were 40% of those people lived in a medical state, right, that had medical cannabis laws. 60% of the people didn't.
Wow.
82% of those wanted to have cannabis as a federally legal treatment option, and 83% believed that the federal government should just straight up legalize medical cannabis.
Yeah.
And these are veteran households. So veterans, their family members, or their caregivers. 60% of those folks were 60 and above, okay, in that demographic. The split between support for medical cannabis amongst conservative, liberals, and nonpartisans was about essentially 38% of the people that responded described themselves as conservative, 33% as liberal, and 29% as nonpartisan within that 92% that are supporting cannabis. And 22% of the veterans that we surveyed said that they were using medical cannabis to treat a mental or physical condition.
Which is incredible. That's one out of four almost. Yeah. I mean, it's a high number. And the fact that, again, this is not, and I know a lot of people who partake in cannabis for medical or otherwise reasons. Mm. You can smoke as much of it as you want. It's not going to kill you. and yet it is still a Schedule One narcotic, which right. means that it has no other value other than just it's a dangerous drug. It's not deadly, yet we're giving people deadly drugs. Codeine, opioids, things like that are being prescribed every day, and more research is done on them every day and getting more and more of that product out there. Why? That's the question that everyone needs to ask. And it seems we're moving in the right direction. I think I know how this ends. Mm-hmm. The question is, how much time do we waste and how many lives might it cost in the meantime?
How many more Boone Cutlers and Thomas Brennans, you know, are going to have to struggle every day? And how many more vets are committing suicide because, you know, the treatments that they've been prescribed, which weren't designed for PTSD, aren't working?
It's a fascinating discussion and one that hopefully comes to an end and comes to a good realization very soon. So in about 15 minutes or so, you're going to get to hear the conversation that I had with Joe and Nick Edden, former Navy SEAL, Naval Academy graduate, executive director of the Veterans Cannabis Project, about the work that they're doing. And the American Legion, as Joe just said, heard from their membership, and it is not even close. This wasn't like, well, 55% of the membership think, no. We're talking like 90% of veterans overall think that looking at this is a good idea. And I think you're going to see more and more people who are against it kind of coming around on it. And I use the example of within my family. I have an aunt who's unfortunately suffering from a fairly rare form of cancer. And one of the ways that they have been able to help her deal with the pain is through marijuana, basically. And so I think some members of my family who were previously very strongly against it in all forms may be changing their tune a little bit because it has helped her a little bit as well. But that conversation with former SEAL and Naval Academy graduate Nick Etten coming up, as well as Tim Kennedy, a man who, you know what? I'm a big MMA fan, Jake. You know that. You've been over to my house for the UFC fights. I don't even think Tim Kennedy had a nickname. You know, a lot of them come in like Brian All-American Stan or Chris the All-American Weidman. I think the two of them should have a conversation about their nicknames. I mean, yeah, Chris has the in front of it, and he was an All-American wrestler. But, you know, there's different people. A lot of them have nicknames. I'm trying to think of who else there is that, like Stipe Miocic doesn't have one, the current heavyweight title. But Tim Kennedy didn't need one. He was just Tim Kennedy.
Spoke through his actions.
That's all you needed to know. And a great fighter who was one fight away from a title shot and kind of got screwed out of it by the UFC, giving his competitor, former Olympic gold medalist wrestler Yoel Romero of Cuba, didn't come out for the third round. Stayed on his stool in the corner and wouldn't come out. He's supposed to call the fight at that point. They didn't. They gave him extra time, essentially, to relax and get back into it after Tim rocked him, and then he knocked him out in that third round. So, yeah, one of those things. But I want to take a look around at the news, and here's a big one that you mentioned to me when I came in this morning. Jake's usually here a few minutes ahead of me and taking a look at the wires and taking a look at the news, and then I like to listen to what's catching Jake's eye, and this caught your eye, and it caught me last night, too, when I first heard about it. Do you remember? It was about a month ago or so. There was the three-star general, Lieutenant General Jay Silveria, superintendent of the Air Force Academy, gave a speech that was roundly applauded about racism at the Air Force Academy and in the military and how there's no place for it. And this came after, apparently, a candidate for the Air Force Academy Preparatory School. So that's what they are. Not necessarily, they're not a cadet yet at the Air Force Academy. It's each of the academies has prep schools. Found some racist words, including the N-word written outside of his room. His mother posted it on social media. Became a big thing. The general came out and said what should have been said in a situation like that. Here's the thing.
Uh-oh.
Situation was created by the student himself. It was revealed that this cadet, there were five black cadets who found, cadet candidates again, because this was from the preparatory school, found racial slurs scrawled on message boards outside their doors, basically at the prep school dorm. And it turned out that it was actually an African-American cadet candidate who was doing it, who is no longer at the prep school, no longer at the academy. Don't know exactly when they figured it out. I would imagine it was probably a little while ago, and then they put it out. I know how military public affairs works.
Yeah.
I worked in public affairs. If it's not something that there's someone knocking on your door about, the rules are you're supposed to get it out as quickly as you possibly can. Is that the actuality? No, it often isn't. So Academy spokesman, Lieutenant Colonel Alan Heritage, said, quote, the individual admitted responsibility, and this was validated by the investigation. adding racism has no place at the Academy in any shape or form. And the reason that they're saying that is that this was racism, perhaps not in the shape or form that most people think of it, but someone trying to, for whatever reason, drum up some sort of controversy over this and say that something's flag. Yeah, which is a term that a lot of people don't like to hear because, you know, too many people who use that term false flag are using it in very strange ways.
But
you know, like school shootings and things like that. But in this case, that's exactly what it is. That's saying, hey, this is what happened, when the reality is, oh, no, you created it. That's what a false flag is. And we've seen a lot of it, man, dating back to, about a year ago, last November.
Something happened around there that made all this happen. I wonder what.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it made all of it happen, but we've seen a whole bunch of things. And we were talking about this morning before we went on air. I was working in a newsroom in New York City at 1010 Winds, and we would see these stories coming in, and the majority of them I would call shenanigans on almost right away, because the stories just didn't make sense. There was Yasmin Saweed, who was a freshman college student from Long Island, who was claimed that she was attacked on a subway by people screaming Donald Trump. And I said, well, where's the video? You know, over the next couple of days, where's the video? This happened in the New York City subway station. She said it happened on the train and then in the station. They've chased her and everything, and we have no video of this. It doesn't make any sense. Turned out she lied. She admitted to it later. And not all, but nearly all of the cases that we've seen, including this one now affecting the military, have not been exactly what they seemed at the beginning. You've had a lot of people doing it to themselves. You had one, the AP just put out the story that it was at a university, not sure which university it was, but where someone defaced their own car on Halloween. And the university has to hold all sorts of meetings and everything. And then the police find out, that's not what it was. But when you see these things happening, and we're seeing more and more of them, listen, I'd rather see these hoaxes than an actual hate crime, because hate crimes are horrifying things based on a despisal of someone because of what they look like or where they were born or something like that. And there's nothing okay or cool about that by any stretch of the imagination. So when it's a hoax, you go, oh, thank goodness that this didn't actually happen that way, because it would be horrifying if it did. At the same time, it's not good that these things are happening. But how do you look at these hoaxes when you see them?
Well, when I first think about it, the first thing that comes to my mind is, like you said, I'm glad it didn't happen like that, because to see actual acts of racism like that is disgusting. But at the same time, it worries me about these people and their worldviews and their mindsets, and that they're so certain that these kind of things happen that they feel they need to martyr themselves to make us see this stuff actually happens when they do it themselves. And at the same time, it's the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah.
Because if these things keep happening and they keep being perpetrated by the people that claimed it was against them, what happens if something like this actually happens?
Yeah.
And then it's not taken as seriously because, oh, maybe this is just another hoax.
Well, and the other thing is, the Yasmin Saweed case that I mentioned up in New York, that got a lot of press because when she admitted it, the media came out and said, like, oh, this was actually a hoax. It was one of the ones that got a lot of ink, because she also then disappeared. She disappeared as things were starting to turn and people were like, was this real or not? Then she ran away and then she came back and was like, oh, no, it's not real. Then her father shaved her head as she showed up for a court appearance for the hoax thing. And yeah, it turned out why she did it was because her father was very strict. She was out partying and drinking, which are both against the rules, and was going to get home way after her curfew. So she made up a story of being a victim of a hate crime, and that's essentially why it happened. In that case, listen, 18, 19-year-old girl doing something stupid. Okay, you know, stupid things happen. I understand her motivation for it, not wanting to get in trouble. We've all probably did stupid things when we were kids, not wanting to get in trouble.
And made up stupid stories to cover it up. And
yeah,
it happens.
But never accusing anyone of a federal crime, essentially, which is what she did. And Kansas State was where the other one happened. This car that had racist graffiti painted on it on Halloween. The young man has come out and said, this is not a hate crime. I did this myself. It was a hoax, a prank that got out of hand. It's like, well, who were you pranking? You did it to your own car.
Yeah, exactly.
How is that a prank? He's not being charged. And that's another thing that The Yasmin Saweed one, yeah, there were charges filed in that one. This Air Force Academy issue, it appears that the cadet candidate is no longer there, which, you know, could raise a lot of questions as far as motivation for doing this. Why would someone want to do something like that at a place like the Air Force Academy, which is, you know, from everything I've heard, I didn't go there. I've never been to Colorado in my life, I don't think. It's supposed to be a pretty egalitarian place where it's based on your success, own personal individual success. Yeah. So could this have been a student, and the student is no longer at the prep school? Don't know if it's related to the investigation or not. Could it be someone who was struggling and was trying to get like a little bit of the sympathy by doing something like this?
It's the thing is, we can't know because that information probably is never going to be released. This seems like the kind of thing, because like you said, this most likely was found out a while ago, and the military likes to handle things like this kind of quietly when it's something like that. But also, my little theory or thing, something is that these people that commit these sorts of hoaxes believe that the environment they are in has those racist elements in it, and they're trying to bring attention to it.
Here's the thing, though. I had a long discussion when I was in college over, there were already some things happening like this a couple of years ago where we would see reports of things and I would go, it's not real. That didn't happen. There's no way that this happened because that's not how people do things. One involved a former Marine in New Jersey who was a waitress and also a lesbian who claimed that people didn't give her a tip and instead wrote something like, you're a horrible lesbian. We don't want anything to do with lesbians. God despises you, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
That you've seen a bunch of those stories.
Yeah.
Find me one where it was actually the case that happened. I can think of one, and it was I think it was Warren Sapp, NFL player, who like is notoriously not the most pleasant person. Instead of a tip, wrote down like for the tip, wrote like get a better job or something like that for the tip, which I think he was trying to be funny. But it turned out that this Marine, who then during the media coverage claimed to be a combat veteran injured in Iraq and all this other stuff. Well, here's the thing. That ended up getting her caught out, for one, because they can look at your military records and your military command can be like, yeah, no. So it turned out she was injured while serving in the reserves in the Marine Corps in New Jersey, where she slipped and fell off of the back of a truck, I think it was, and hurt her back. So never went to Iraq. So none of that ever happened. And the family that picked it up actually went and that were accused of doing that, they recognized the receipt as theirs, went in, and it turned out that it was a pickup order. I don't give people a tip when I'm picking up food. Tip is for service. You just bagged up my food. You don't get a tip for that. No. So most people, I think, don't give a tip when picking up food. You're the one who had to come there, deliver it to my house. Then you get a tip.
Exactly.
If I have to drive over there and get it, you ain't getting a tip. She took the receipt and wrote that herself. Whenever you see those receipts, look at the handwriting, look at the ink. Sometimes it's not even in the same color ink. Those things are almost always hoaxes. But you know, we've seen more and more of this, and the people that are trying to create and I think you're right. I think there are, particularly on college campuses, because boy, I spent 3.5 years on one. On two, actually, and there are a lot of people there who believed that there was this underlying current of bigotry, homophobia, racism, everything that it was just there bubbling under the surface. And it might not, you might not see it, and you might not see any examples of it, but it's there, man.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, what do you mean it's there? If we can't see it, we're not seeing any examples, but you're just telling us to assume that it's there. And I think that's where some of this comes from. People creating incidents to say like, aha, see, I was right. This is here. Not thinking ahead, because again, typically this is going to be young people who are going to go not think things through and not realize like, oh, I'm probably going to be caught for that. There was another one where I think it was a noose or a banana peel at a school was put up. And then it turned out that not only was it a student, not only was it one of the students who was heading up the group that was so offended by this that put it up there, that student was actually the child of an administrator at the school who was in charge of like diversity and equality programs. I mean, it would be hilarious if it weren't so destructive and so divisive. I mean, it's a sad situation when people feel the need to create instances like that for the purpose of making other groups look bad. whichever side is doing it. And lately it's been typically coming from more the left side towards the right, trying to say like, oh, look at all these racists and homophobes and bigots. Oh, look at what they're doing. They're so brazen. They're putting a noose up in a tree. One of them was just like, from a lantern that had been hung at a school's festival like 6 months earlier.
I think it was the actress, comedian Sarah Silverman that got all mad. Someone drew a swastika on my floor, on the sidewalk outside my house. It was a construction mark.
Yeah.
That like, just happened to kind of almost look like a swastika.
It looked like one third of a swastika if you turned some of the things around the other way.
Squinted and turned your head.
Well, Sarah, I think, lost her mind for a little bit. She also was calling for armed revolution. Like, hey, if we get the military on our side, then we can have the revolution we need. I was like, yeah, that's probably not what you want to be talking about. But hey, you know, some people get a little loopy when things aren't going their way. Here's the thing that I think I will say, and I think Jake will agree. Just calm down.
Yeah.
And if you're worried that something out there is really going to happen, wait until it actually happens. Don't make it happen on your own. Morning Briefing. Back after this.
Helping military veterans stay connected.
We make it easy.
We are CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting vets every day.
Online and all over social media. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Connecting Vets.
Good morning and welcome back to the Morning Briefing, Wednesday, November 8th, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer on the other side of the glass, and ConnectingVets.com is your website. And we mean that, created by veterans for veterans, providing the latest and greatest news, information, education, and entertainment to you, our veteran brothers and sisters, as well as the veteran spouses, veteran dependents, all those people part of our extended family out there. You know, speaking of entertainment, our next guest has been entertaining me and his fellow veterans for many years and in a variety of ways. He's probably best known for his time as a top-level mixed martial artist competing in Strikeforce, the UFC, and other promotions where he achieved a record of 18-6 as a professional. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. He's had success as a television host with the History Channel's Hunting Hitler. He's an entrepreneur who's had successful partnerships with companies like Ranger Up, and he's even dipped his toe in the acting pool, most notably in the vet-created movie Range 15. And of course, he's a Ranger, Sniper, and Green Beret in the United States Army. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show the one and only Tim Kennedy. Tim, good morning. How are you today?
Top of the morning. I'm spectacular.
All right. We're doing pretty well here, and it's really great to talk to you because, as I mentioned, big MMA fan. I think one of the greatest moments in MMA was Fight for the Troops 3, where you won the main event with a walk-off knockout. But before that, you enlisted in the United States Army, and as I understand it, you went to college first and then enlisted afterwards. So let me ask about that. What led you to join the wonderful United States Army all those years ago?
Pissed off. 9/11. I was sitting at a computer the morning of 9/11, watching those planes slam into the buildings, and walked out of the recruiting office the same day.
Wow! So it was literally that much of a decision. Like you knew that that was what you wanted to do, and after you joined at that time, tell us just a little bit about your career trajectory. As I mentioned, Ranger, Sniper, Green Beret. What was your time in the Army that first enlistment like?
Amazing. You know, the Special Forces selection, the Special Forces qualifying course, they call it Q course. You know, they're all famously difficult things. And I was able to attend a lot of advanced schools once I got to Special Forces, hostage rescue courses and other shooting courses. The job that we are doing, the war is just starting. And, in the past, Special Forces, you know, I think they had a very heavy body of capable soldiers to teach and equip military. This was kind of the first time in a while that we were going to be fighting alongside the men and women that we were going to be training.
Right.
So we had that guys that were capable of war fighting at the highest level, in addition to being able to culturally and economically and socially understand the different cultures that we had to work with.
And of course, you had numerous deployments in support of Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom. People who are interested in your time in the military and even your time in training, there's a lot that they can find out about that out there. And of course, your mixed martial arts career, which kind of began while you were still serving, of course, as an amateur. And then, of course, in the Modern Army Combatives Tournament. I know you trained in martial arts as a kid, but what was it that got you into competing in MMA? In fact, on top of all the training and all the difficulty that you had to do within the Army as well, why did you want to add that to the list of things that you had to deal with as well?
I mean, I think, you know, your chassis is you know, the foundation of everything that you are, and it has to be a very well-built, solid chassis. So I want to be the best Green Beret possible. I want to be the most vicious, hardest to kill person on the planet when that time was needed, but then also be a compassionate, understanding friend and partner to the guys that I was working with. And fighting was kind of a means to an end. You know, if you hand me a gun, I'm a pretty dangerous guy. If you hand me a bat, I'm a pretty dangerous guy. You know, if you stick me in the octagon, you know, there's a couple of people on the planet that might have a chance of beating me, and I know them by first name. You know, everybody else, I'm pretty much gonna. So, you know, it was just to be better at my job.
Right. And of course, you were fantastic at your job, but at one point, and we'll talk about how you've actually come back to the Green Berets, but at one point, you decided to bring that to an end, basically, and finish your military career and focus more on fighting professionally, and then, of course, focusing on the TV work that we mentioned. What do you remember about that transition period when you decided to end your Army career at the time and work full-time on that other stuff? Was it a difficult transition for you, or did it go pretty smoothly?
No, it went really smooth. I think a lot of, you know, I've never had a break in service. I went from active duty to the National Guard, and then from the National Guard back to a more busy type of military work. The time where I was going to be fighting and doing television and running my businesses full time, or that's, you know, my real job, was it's effortless. You know, I think a lot of people assume that you know, you're going to get a handout as a veteran, or you know, you should put on your business card "vet owned business" and somebody has a patriotic duty to help you. Like, none of that is true. Yeah. The reason that veterans succeed, and the reason that veterans should succeed, is because we're better at things because we've been working harder. We're going to be the first to get up. We're going to be the last to go to bed. We are going to be focused and disciplined. We're going to be efficient with our time. Our time management is going to be unlike anybody else ever. But the only way that's the case is if we put it into practice. We put into practice the things that we've been trained, the things that we know we can do, and we actually go and do them. A lot of the skills that you get in the military don't translate well to the civilian world. But the ones that do are the ones that no one has, especially this current generation, where they're want to walk into their office and sit on a sandbag and have you know, a soda water infused cup of coffee before they get to work. I'm going to walk into work before anybody else is there, and I'm going to be the last person to leave, and I'm going to be more efficient with my time, and you know, my task management is going to be the load, the volume of work I'm going to be able to do and that's because we've been trained to do that. Not because anybody's going to give us anything. And I promise you, veterans that are assuming that they're going to get out and that the transition is going to be okay, well, I'm going to get points when I put on my application, to be a firefighter or a police officer, veteran experience points. No, man, be number one on the test. Be number one on both the academic and physical test. Be the number one on the interview. Be the number one on everything. You know, be the hardest working person out there, and that's how you're going to succeed. And that's how it was for me. Like, everything has been easy, and I work hard.
We're speaking with Tim Kennedy, former MMA superstar in UFC, currently Green Beret in the United States Army, and also a litany of other things that we're going to talk about here over the next few minutes with Tim. Now, Tim, do you think of yourself as setting an example? Because I know a lot of veterans look at you, like myself, and go, wow, not only is he doing so many things that are so great, it's the amount and the volume that you're doing, that you're finding time, you're finding the ability to do all this stuff. You know, it makes me feel a little bit lazy at times. And I think that's a good thing when I look at people like you. How do you view yourself as far as any influence you might have on the veteran community through your actions?
The only influence I worry about for the veteran community is the same thing that motivated me to train so hard on an ODA, is not to let down my brothers and sisters. And it's no different. As an entrepreneur, I just don't want to let anybody down. I know a lot of people depend and look on me. I have employees, colleagues and partners that I'm not going to let down. The people that watch me on television, different TV shows, I don't want to say or do something that is going to disappoint them. You know, the same on social media. I say a lot of pretty provocative things, but I still try to make sure everybody is proud that I represent them. Regarding being an example or any of that other stuff, man, I don't care. I just try to work hard. Try to work hard and not let anybody down.
Right. Well, and let's talk about social media and the fact that you are not the type of person to hold back. When you got something that you want to say, you say it. Recently, we were talking in the office here about a statement that you put out over the flag protests and people kneeling, and I thought it was one of the most well thought out, rational responses to it, referring to that empty table setting that we know of and all the mess facilities and all the galleys and stuff like that. When it comes to the social media and during your military career and being still, you know, a Green Beret, what's been the reaction from big military on how outspoken you are and the attention that some of the things that you say get?
I've definitely gotten chastised, castigated for the things that I have said, but they weren't wrong, you know. And, but the times that I've gotten my ass chewed out, and I've had my ass chewed out plenty of times, it's I'm okay with that, because I think, you know, one of the instances is when we're talking about letting female soldiers into combat arms and whether they should be in the Green Berets and Ranger School. And, I was very clear about if it does happen, how it should happen. And that's keeping all of the requirements the same and not playing with words, not playing with language that, will happen the same as when everybody needs to score 100 on the PT test in their three different events, so a cumulative score of 300. While that sounds like the same, that means that the people, the soldiers, will be doing different. A female soldier will have to do, 40 push-ups, whereas a male soldier will have to do 60-something push-ups. So by being clever with a play in words, you're saying that the soldiers will have the same requirement, but it's not true. And I called people on that, and then I was told to shut my face because it's a pilot program that they're testing. And then I again was like, well, guess what? The military is not a place for social experiments. I don't care what agenda you have. It's all about making sure our military is the most lethal fighting force on the planet. And you can keep your social experiments in Congress, and you can keep it in the White House, and you can do whatever you want with it. Just don't put it on us, because we have to go overseas and fight with your little dumb experiments, and men and women are going to be dying, brave men and women. So again, I got chewed out for that. but it doesn't mean I'm wrong.
No.
And I'm not the smartest guy in the world. Maybe I might say something that's wrong. And if I find out that I'm wrong, I'm going to apologize, because I think that's what you're supposed to do. But I'm not going to mince words. I'm going to be honest and to the best of my ability, and to coming from a man that speaks a few languages, a graduate school student, been to more countries I can count, fought in almost every single continent on the planet, I'm going to give you the best thing I can from my perspective. And I realize that it's still just my perspective.
And whether he's one of the smartest men on the planet or not, I don't know the answer to that. I do know he's one of the baddest men on the planet. Tim Kennedy, Green Beret, Ranger, Sniper, MMA fighter in the UFC, Strike Force, and others. Also actor, TV presenter. And Tim, we had a fellow Ranger of yours on the show yesterday, Tristan Flannery of Zero Hour Media. And when we mentioned that you were coming on today, he said that the thing that's always impressed him the most about you is your understanding of needing to have the ability to be able to step in front of a camera, to be able to promote yourself in the proper way, to get out on social media and do those things. Did that just come naturally to you, or was that something that you needed to work on?
No, it definitely didn't come natural. I hate television. I hate the industry that is television. You know, when you have, it's horrible to say, but like the Harvey Weinstein is a pretty nice embodiment of a cultural problem within a specific industry. And it's not just a rape problem, and it's not just a male-dominated bunch of jerks being really disgusting humans to each other. It's, you know, their power plays, all the worst things, all the worst characteristics about humans are exemplified there. So, man, I had a hard time being and having to operate in that industry. But I have kind of this purpose, you know, and I realize that being in front of a camera is a means to an end. And I want to affect change. I want to affect positive change to my brothers and sisters in uniform, to the America that I fought for, that I got blown up for, that I've killed for, the America that I believe still exists. You know, we may not be putting our best foot forward sometimes. And I want to be able to have a say in that. I want to be able to say, hey, check this guy out. You know, this guy is saying some really neat things about this America idea. You know, and we're a young country, and we're still figuring it out. And but even as a young country, what we are founded on is this beautiful concept that is ever-changing. And sometimes even up for interpretation. So you have to have brilliant minds that that can perceive what we should be and what we are and what we came from. And so I try to help. I want to be in a position, and that's where putting myself out there and growing my brand is, so that I can help people make a better America.
Right. And one way that you put yourself out there that got a little bit of press at the time was you publishing your contact information, basically, and saying, hey, ISIS, come and get me if you want to give that a try. Now, that was, of course, a statement that I would imagine some people in your chain of command at the Army were none too pleased with. But what did you intend to do with that, to show just that, you know, the American people and the military are not afraid? Or what was the intention behind publishing your address, essentially, and saying, hey, here it is, come and get it?
We're the baddest people on the planet. You know, we are. Maybe we might be the obese right now, the most obese. We might be sometimes even the most lazy. But we built the Golden Gate Bridge, the Chrysler Building. We built those two towers before they were brought down by radical terrorists. You know, we dug the Panama Canal. We landed on the freaking moon. And we did it using feet and inches, not meters and centimeters. You know, like, we are... We're not perfect, but we won World War II. We stopped. We're not anti-fa. That's not what I'm talking about. We stopped real fascism.
Right.
We stopped Nazis that were gassing Jews in gas chambers in Auschwitz. You know, like that. We did that. Mm-hmm. You know, we made D-Day successful. We're pulling that. So, like we stopped communism, and are still fighting it today. But like we would the whole entire world be communist had we not done something from 1955 on. And so now we have a bunch of fanatics and radicals that are throwing gay people off of roofs and throwing acid on little girls that go to school. All the things that we are proud to defend as Americans. Because I think that it kind of goes along with who we and what we are, where we're going to stand up for the little guy. We're going to respect the freedoms of people, whether it's a girl that wants to go to school or a girl that wants to vote or drive a car both of which are not allowed under Sharia law, or being gay. Well, I'm not, and I don't care if anybody else is. I'm pretty not cool with you pushing gay guys off roofs because you don't like their sexual orientation, or walking into a nightclub and shooting them. While I will, without a doubt, without a moment of hesitation, go and fight and kill anybody that tries to do that, because I believe it's your freedom to do whatever the hell you want. And that's what I was saying, you know, that these are a bunch of impotent little cowards that have been picking on the defenseless around the world. And that's not what you're dealing with here in the United States. You know, if they can continue doing what they're doing, which is walking into soft targets and hurting women and children, or they can grow a set of balls and try and mess with the people that they pretend that they are. And that's somebody that is actually tough. Mm-hmm. And I'm not anything special, because there are millions and millions and millions of other men and women just like me that will tear their throats out and laugh at them because they're disgusting terrorists.
Well, definitely a powerful message that you put out by giving them your address and saying, come and get some. Although I did wonder, I wonder if some of Tim's friends are going to stop dropping in unannounced because they think you might be watching that driveway a little bit more closely. As you mentioned, you know, working within the TV industry, you found difficulty with that because of the way it's set up and kind of the environment. One way around that was being involved in Range 15 through Ranger Up, Nick Palmisano, and so many other great people involved in that. Our friend Dale Dye. Range 15, a fantastic movie. If people are interested in it, it's available for purchase out there. And now, secondarily, a documentary about Range 15 is doing pretty well on iTunes from what I've been seeing. So what can you tell me about Not a War Story, Tim?
It is a documentary about Range 15, but it's a documentary about veterans succeeding. You know, it is, what is bridging the gap? You know, like, what is that? Everybody says it. Hey, we're, you know, transition from military to civilian career, blah, 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 blah. Let me show you what it actually looks like in practice. That's what Not a War Story is. It is a guy with no legs and no arms, dressed as a zombie, covered in blood, crawling down the street, while smoke's going off in the making of the zombie film. The zombie film Range 15 is really just the cracker for the caviar. And the caviar is Matt Best and Rocco and JT and Nick Palmisano and Jack Mandeville. It's this group of military veterans that are setting out to not only demonstrate what veterans can do, but more importantly, going into the most inhospitable environment on the planet, i.e. Hollywood, and making a Hollywood feature-length film and being successful at it. You know, like, really giving them the middle finger. And this was before we knew how disgusting Hollywood is and the things that they do. This is before that. We knew. But this is like, listen, you know, everywhere that we went, people tried to stop us. And you can't. You know, like, it's like a bunch of Iraqi tanks in Gulfstorm 1. It's just a bad idea to try and stop us. We're going to make it to Baghdad one way or another, and you're either all going to die or you're going to fly the white flag. And this is what it was here. And so Not a War Story is a powerfully inspiring movie about who we are as veterans.
And we're coming to, you know, we're running out of time here. I could talk to you for hours about all this stuff, and I love hearing your opinions on it. But, you know, as you talk about the success of veterans, and as we look around, and some of the guests we've had on the show, like Evan from Black Rifle Coffee, one of your fellow Green Beret operators there, where do you think we are as far as veterans in success? Are you happy with where the amount of veteran success that you see out there, or do we need even more of it, do you think?
Oh, no, totally not happy. I would even, like, scratch on disappointed. I don't want to go on a rant, but we really need to be, people need to come to us for business, not because we're vets. People need to come to us to do business because we're the best at doing that job. That's it. Yeah. Not, you know, they're going to Black Rifle Coffee, not because it's a veteran-owned coffee company, even though it is, not because everybody that works there is a barrel-chested freedom fighter, beard-wearing American, even though they are. They're going there because they make really good coffee, you know? That's why. People are coming to Ranger Up because we make really awesome T-shirts and jeans and backpacks and shot glasses, not because we're a veteran-owned company. It's because we make really cool stuff. Yep. You know, the people are coming to Sheepdog Response, not because we're a veteran-owned company, even though we are. They're coming to us because we're putting out the best information on the planet to save lives.
Right.
And that's why. So I hate entitlement in any form. I hate somebody saying, hey, give me money. I have a bunch of kids, or I can't afford my medication for a disease that I caused myself from my drug use or from eating unclean or unhealthily. Like, I hate all forms of that. And one form of that is the veteran that's like, hey, man, I served 4 years. I deserve this. No, you don't. The only thing that they promised you was three meals and a cot and a whole bunch of pain and a whole bunch of hard work and bad knees and a bad back. That's what they promised you.
Mm.
So now it's on you to succeed. And they gave you tools. The military, hey, love them or hate them, they gave you tools and you just have to use them. So I want to see more. I want to see, we have the lowest percentage of congressmen and women that have military experience right now that in the history of our country. That disgusts me.
Hmm.
The Senate needs to be filled with men and women that have served their country and understand what service means. There's my rant. Sorry, I just keep going.
Hey, that's man, I wish we could, but as I mentioned, we are running out of time. So, Tim, if people are interested in finding out more about you, the companies you're involved with, the movies that you're working on, the TV show, is there any place that they can go that's going to have all that information, or are there a few places they should go?
I'm on social. I try to be pretty accessible there. Tim Kennedy MMA is my Instagram, my Twitter, my Facebook, and I think I still do Snapchat. But it's Tim Kennedy MMA for everything. You just type in Tim Kennedy MMA and up I pop, and I try to keep, to some degree, a healthy amount of information on there.
Well, Tim Kennedy giving us a healthy amount of information, opinion, and so much good stuff. A man that I think each and every one of us in the veteran community respects, even if they don't agree with him. You've been listening to The Morning Briefing. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Hey, see you tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.